News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. A lot of rain this morning. Rain tonight, tomorrow, into Saturday, maybe even into Sunday morning, according to Dr. Bill Williams, and he knows all about the weather. Talks about it all the time. He's our guy, and it's also going to be kind of cool. So just be careful. We'll keep an eye on traffic as well.
Yes, we will. Want to bring on a good friend of ours, Dr. Mike Rim, Rim Animal Clinic, and a big supporter of the Rolling Tigers Booster Club. Dr. Mike, thank you so much for coming on with us this morning.
Man, thank you guys for having me on. It's been a great year so far. We've only got 80 tickets left to sell for the, this is the 13th year, and it's the final year that we're doing the drawdown. So we'll, you know, raise money in the future, but we're not going to do the drawdown and, you know, after this. So there's only 80 tickets left, so you need to hurry in and get them. But, Coach Rob Taylor, who is the wheelchair coach, is going to be here. It's going to be catered by Bay Gourmet, DJed by Matt McCoy. And, of course, we have a lot of people donating a lot of things for our silent auction. But one thing that I'd like to say is, the you know, it's a drawdown, so you don't want to be picked until the last, you know, draw. Mm-hmm. But the first number pick is going to get a $200 gift certificate to Briquettes. And we've got a ton of prizes that, like, every 10 pulls, we're going to give away a Callahan's cap or a Nixon's Midtown Restaurant cap.
Yeah.
And then a whole lot of other goodies. But if I can, I'll just go down real quick on the silent auction. We have Cam Coleman from Auburn and Chris Davis from Alabama. I think those are probably the two best receivers in the country. We also have Bo Nix on an Auburn and Nick Saban on an Alabama helmet. So that's going to be really good. We also have Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts on Eagles, Peyton Manning on Colts, Chris Davis, the kick six, on Auburn, and then we have Bruce Pearl and Stephen Pearl basketballs. We're efforting Golish right now. Don't know if we'll have him, but we have Butch Thompson, and then we have Tua, and I can't pronounce his last
Tungavaloa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And save the Golish autograph for Jeff Poor.
Jeff
Poor. He's a really big fan.
Yeah, Golish is, what'd you say, 10-year-old son? His might be the autograph worth getting there.
Yeah,
introduced him at the press conference.
Yeah.
Said, watch out, Auburn.
Watch out for him.
Ryan Williams, I think, early you said Chris Davis, but Ryan Williams for Bama fans out there got some signed stuff there. And you mentioned it. I mean, it's a great time every year. I hate this will be the last year, but for folks who haven't been, you got to get there at St. Dominic's Murphy. Only 80 tickets left at St. Dominic's Murphy Center. The $10,000 drawdown is obviously the big prize in all of this. So I love that, you know, people are so fired up and hoping that there will be the last name drawn so they can win that money. So it has to be so disheartening to be the first name pulled. I love that you've given a prize for that person just to kind of ease the pain a little bit.
That's right. And, you know, the Bay Gourmet has been our caterer every year, and they just do such a fantastic job. And it's a great time. Matt McCoy, you know, we have, you know, beer and wine and food and just great fellowship. And then all the proceeds go to Auburn Wheelchair Sports. And, you know, every year it gets more expensive. This year, Auburn's wheelchair team is doing really good. They have played Bama twice, and Auburn won one, Bama won one. So, you know, it may be a Iron Bowl wheelchair event for the national championship this year.
All right. Some incredible athletes, and they've been through so much. I love that you have a focus on them. Well, Dr. Mike, we really appreciate it. For folks who want to get some of those last remaining tickets, Rim on Hillcrest, is that the only place, or where else can they do that?
Yeah, Rim, you can just contact Rim Animal Clinic on Hillcrest or call me. 251-232-4753. And we take Venmo, credit card, you know, cash, check, whatever.
All right, Mike. Sounds good, man. Good luck with the event, and we'll help promote it as it gets closer.
Thank you. Take care.
You got it.
Great guy there. Dr. Mike Rem. He has some animals to get to, so we'll let him go there. But that's December 10th, the Rolling Tigers Booster Club Bash, the 13th, and apparently last one they'll be holding, $10,000 drawdown. That's the big prize. But you heard those silent auction items, some big names there with Cam Coleman and Ryan Williams, and then some of the names from the past. I don't know if I've heard Nick Saban. I don't know if I've heard of him.
So. You think of Mike, you think Auburn, but obviously the Rolling Tiger Booster Club and all that. So he's an Auburn guy, and most vets around here went to Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
But they get a lot of Alabama swag, too.
And
they have every year.
They have. So this was some big news, and we heard it there at the top of the hour. And coming up, though, we will get into these narco drug trafficking strikes. You're not going to believe some of the audio I've come across, and we'll play some of that. Someone who's very much pro taking the war to the narco terrorists.
Yep.
But it was from back in 1989. So we'll get to that. But
you know how this is going to go.
The pipe bomb suspect. So this is from New York Post.
This just broke, right?
Yeah, it did. A suspect's been arrested in connection with the planting of pipe bombs outside the DNC and RNC on the eve of January 6th, 2021. The arrest comes 1 month before the five-year anniversary of the melee that briefly delayed congressional confirmation of the Joe Biden election. And they're saying closes an embarrassing chapter for the FBI. I wouldn't close the door on this just yet.
No.
Just because they have a suspect arrested. And the FBI has taken a lot of heat, and I think for good reason, for not having figured this out over the years. It's just led, and I'm not saying that the conspiracy theories are wrong, because I actually think that there's something to a lot of those, but it has allowed America's imagination to run wild for how they can have their eyes on every single person that was involved, but they can't find this one person who dropped these pipe bombs off.
Well, now they've arrested somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So this is it going to be telling or not? It seemed to me, my theory would be, certainly a possibility, that the arrest would have been embarrassing to one side or the other, and they just never made it happen. So now that there is an arrest, I'm really curious where this goes from here.
I am too. A report released in January this year by Republican Congressman Barry Loudermilk and Kentucky Republican Thomas Massie claimed that little meaningful progress had been made in the pipe bomb investigation and charged that the feds had, quote, refused to provide substantive updates to Congress. Remember, I had that story from, I think it was The Blaze, with reporting from other journalists, and they had said they matched the walk
right,
of the suspect to a Capitol police officer turned CIA,
like,
which I thought was quite an outstanding claim, because they gave her name without, I mean, if they're wrong, I mean, obviously that would be an issue.
Yep.
And they'd be liable for some charges there of some sort, I'm sure, by putting this person on blast if they weren't involved. But there was a lot to that story, because that Capitol police officer lived right next door to a home they were casing out that week, the day after, I think, as they were trying to investigate mm-hmm. who put those pipe bombs there. She just happened to live in the duplex that was right next door to the one they were casing out.
Huh.
They had all this other information that they said kind of checked out, making her a potential suspect. We don't know who this suspect is yet, but that's some pretty big news dropping out this morning that they had found someone.
That's huge.
It is.
So, well, I say it's huge. I'm dubious. I'm going to wait till it all. We'll wait.
Yes.
I'm not going to begin to shoot off the confetti just yet.
You're not allowed to wait, Dan. You're supposed to come out with a hot take immediately,
mm-hmm.
like all of these people with the hot take on war crimes in the Caribbean. As today, we finally get to hear Admiral Bradley tell his side of the story. Last night, ABC News, which is certainly no beacon of conservative ideas and media, they came out pretty strong, saying sources say that was a more or less good strike on that narco boat back on September 2nd. That was the first of the strikes. So,
oh, that was the first one.
That was the very first one.
Okay.
And Admiral Bradley today expected to say that they did all kinds of work leading up to this. Hegseth was looking, poring over the intelligence. They gathered to watch the first strike and then waited an hour for the smoke to clear. That first strike reportedly killed 9 of the 11 on board, and then waited an hour literally for the smoke to clear before realizing that 2 of them had survived. And Admiral Bradley is expected today to say those 2 climbed back on board and were believed to have been radioing nearby vessels, nearby drug-running vessels, and potentially trying to keep that drug operation going. And that's when the go-ahead was given for a second strike. That's all going to be today behind closed doors in a congressional hearing as Admiral Bradley speaks. But ABC News came out with that yesterday, and then Wall Street Journal with another report. And it's another one of those things that seems the political spin went way ahead of waiting out to see what the actual facts of the entire operation were.
Happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Happens a lot, especially with Trump in control. Everything can be questioned. Everything can be spun. Everything can be put the world on panic. He's at it again. Whatever. So now we find that this whole idea of taking out narco terrorists, which I thought was a recently coined term, has been around a long time.
It has. And I want to play that audio when we get back from the break of a certain politician saying things that would be considered ultra right wing. Nazi-esque, if it were said today. And this is someone you know pretty well. And we also have some audio from some current Democrats who really seem to be pushing it as far as what they expect of military members and whether or not to follow orders from the president.
It's crazy.
It really is. But we're going to go to a guest quickly here who we haven't talked to in a while. Ricky is on the line. Good morning, Ricky.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
We're good. And I have this story, Ricky, and I don't know if you're going to speak on this at all, from Alex Berenson with Unreported Truths. And the FDA with the mRNA COVID vaccines says may soon place a so-called black box warning on them to alert physicians and parents of their link to childhood deaths. This is a huge story. I don't know how much play it's going to get in the national media. But what do you have to say this morning, Ricky?
I think we're being took out by the globalists. They come up with the vaccines. I think Donald Trump was tricked into it. I think I know it's the Lord has showed me that we're in our Armageddon. We're in Revelation 20 and Daniel 2:43. And the Lord showed me all this before it came out. Cole, remember me calling in, go back and check the show. The Lord was showing me everything. And by the way, my daughter-in-law did take 4 shots. She has AIDS now. And my son has lost his mind. I don't know where he is. He was a first-class electrician for 12 years, and he took a shot, didn't want me to know about. But anyway, I think that's great news that it's coming out. There's some good guys up there that's really trying to expose the medical industry and the powers that be that's behind it that's pushing it, because we're broke. We're dead broke. America's broke. It's $38 trillion in debt, so they want to depopulate us and get us down to a level that they control with digital currency. But this is our Armageddon, according to the scripture. We're in it.
Thank you, Ricky. Appreciate your call, and sorry to hear about your family. Global conspiracy, to me, I think a way to make a lot of money and make a lot of money quickly with these pharmaceutical companies. I think we need to dive in a little further on this story from Alex and Berenson. Alex Berenson, maybe we'll get some time tomorrow.
When did they come out?
Well, he's been pushing it this week, and it's been... Megyn Kelly said she confirmed the reporting yesterday that during these trials of the COVID vaccine, there were apparently some really bad results in children.
Okay.
And that's a real story there. More coming back on Mobile Morning.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Here's an interesting clip that Dalton has found from years gone by.
Mm-hmm.
1989.
Yeah, saw this floating around on the internet. Chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1989, Joe Biden.
Right.
Now, this was during the years of Escobar and the Medellin cartel. You had Noriega down in Panama, and drugs were a big deal under George Bush's, the senior, presidency. Here's Biden delivering a message to the nation in 1989.
Little advice for Republicans.
Every president for the past 2 decades, Democrat and Republican alike, has declared war on drugs. And each of them has lost that war and lost it miserably. They lost because they attempted to deal with only part of the drug problem. They lost because their initiatives were pulled apart by bureaucratic squabbling among their advisors. They lost because they always did too little and they did it too late. We don't oppose the president's plan. All we want to do is strengthen it. We don't doubt his resolve. All we want to do is stiffen it. The trouble is that the president's proposals are not big enough to deal with the problem. We think we should do more to stem the flow of drugs across our borders, and we think we should go one step further. Let's go after the drug lords where they live, with an international strike force. There must be no safe haven for these narco-terrorists, and they must know it. We have to lock up the dealers for a long, long time, and we have to attack the source from which the drugs come. And we have to do that, not a piece at a time, but all at once. And we have to do it now. And there's not any reason why we can't do that. We have the power, we have the money, and we have the knowledge.
Awfully interesting clip. I know, different time.
Well, 1989, that's Joe Biden. 2025, it's right, it's page one of the MAGA playbook on defeating the drugs coming across the border. It's page one. In all caps.
So we've played audio in the past of Chuck Schumer, and it's not hard to find politicians of any ilk shifting their views, but it's so funny now they want to put the Trump administration behind bars or worse for what they're describing as breaking the law of warfare. I think when Admiral Bradley speaks with Congress today in that closed-door session, that ought to clear up some of this.
Some of it.
But you also have the seditious six who continue talking on the media, whether it's Senator Mark Kelly or whoever it may be. And they really seem to be pushing the issue that they want the members of the military to do something about these illegal orders.
This is Warner from Virginia. You want to hear what he's got to say?
Yeah, please.
Check this out.
I'm going to want to get answers on what did PDXF order? Why haven't we seen the whole unedited video? If there's nothing inappropriate here, you could have cleared this up without the admiral coming in. He's got a great reputation. I respect him. I want to get the truth, and I'm not sure we've had the truth from Hegseth yet. Remember, this is an administration that has treated the uniformed military with unprecedented disrespect when they were all brought to get a pep rally in front of Hegseth and Trump. This is an administration that's fired, uniformed generals from the head of the NSA, the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, the uniformed military may help save us from this president and his lame people like Hegseth, because I think their commitment is to the Constitution and obviously not to Trump, and I expect Bradley to adhere to that.
What are we to make of that? And also, Hegseth, like him, I don't know, but they hate him.
Mm-hmm.
They hate Hegseth. They hate Trump. But so what is he saying right there exactly?
Well, I mean, this quote needs to go out and be out all the time. I think in many ways the uniformed military may help save us from this president.
Yeah.
You add that to some of the things that Mark Kelly has said.
Yeah.
I think Cory Booker has had some things to say. They're basically going beyond, I think, that video, which was pretty damning on its own, and the fact that afterwards they weren't able to say which specific acts they were talking about.
There wasn't one.
But they're calling for members of the military to disobey direct orders because they don't like the people that are in charge. You go back to 1989, and do you think Mark Warner would have been saying, don't listen to Joe Biden?
Is he calling for a military coup?
Is Warner?
Yeah.
Sure kind of sounds like it.
Going to talk with Rob from Lanyap on the way. Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings.
Well, that's all right, news.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
835 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. We'll be talking with Rob Hulbert here in just a minute, and plenty to get to in with him in the latest issue of Lanyap. As, monkeys, the Gaifers building, we'll try to get to all of it.
There's monkeys in the Gaifer building yet?
No, not that I know of, but two separate stories, so we'll try to get around to those. But it is football season still, and I know folks are fired up for the playoff game. Well, first we have conference championship games. this week, and then the playoff announcement and bowl games, and a little bit of NFL sprinkled all the way through. You need to have the Underdog app because it makes watching those games a whole lot more fun, whether you're getting ready for that big-time NFC matchup tonight with Detroit hosting Dallas, or you're fired up about these conference championship games coming up Friday and Saturday. Football season's in full swing. Underdog is the best place to get in on all the action. Playing is easy. All you have to do is choose whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats. In football, that would be stats like rushing yards, receptions, touchdowns, and more. Of course, they have all the sports on Underdog, and you can mix and match those sports and different teams into your entries. The more players you add to those entries, the more money you could win. And if you get it right, you could win up to 5,000 times your cash. Today is as good a day as any to download the Underdog app. And when you do, sign up with promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, to score $100 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's the Underdog app, promo code Dalton. Make plays, win money. Must be 19 plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing-at-terms_DFS_.html for details. And if you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Rob Holbert, Lanyap Mobile. Good morning, Rob. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Good.
Hey, we're doing great, and plenty to get to in the latest issue of Lanyap, as always. I don't know, you've got your team just running 24-7 finding these stories, and just we don't have a whole lot
cracking
of
cracking the whip, man.
Cracking the whip.
Yeah, I heard you're a horrible guy to work for.
I am. I'm bad. I'm terrible.
Well, wasn't long ago we were talking about a monkey jumping through window of a Starbucks, and
now we have an address of interest.
I don't think the two stories have been tied together just yet, but monkeys in Tillman's Corner, and not a whole lot of information out there right now.
KRG or I can't remember which TV station reported it, but
Fox.
I think they sent somebody out there, but they had Fox 10. Fox 10, but you know, they went out there and reported that the Fish and Wildlife Service, the federal agency, was out there collecting monkeys out of somebody's yard. But I will say this, the feds won't say anything about the monkeys. They won't tell us anything. We contacted their public relations people. They said they're not talking about it, that they're worried about some sort of blowback from discussing this monkey situation. But, you know, so I don't know. I hope we'll have something on it today, but we've been unable to get them to speak on the matter.
The feds are kind of like that, the hear no evil, say no evil monkeys.
From what I understand, it's 12 monkeys, though, so it's a dozen monkeys. So, you know, I mean, is that the precursor to some sort of apocalyptic situation? I don't know. It's like why we're having all this monkey stuff lately. We had the monkeys over in Mississippi. Now we got monkeys over here.
Mm-hmm. Dalton did
all
some.
These people are collecting monkeys.
Dalton immediately went to ChatGPT, I think, or you went somewhere that you could immediately find out where the largest.
That was just traditional Google. I said, what's the largest monkey bust we've seen? And the Tillman's Corner one was the first one up.
Tillman's Corner popped up on Google.
So it has already.
Tillman's Corner is the biggest monkey bust we've
ever,
got going.
Ever. Yeah. In history.
At least recently. I don't know how far back in history. Surely when circuses have been shut down, they've probably found more. I don't know. But that's not the only animal story in the news. And I think the other one that was a big deal at city council this week, a little more important than the monkeys who don't have cages big enough to swing in Tillman's Corner, but dog attacks. And you had people speaking before city council about these packs of wild dogs or just dogs that have gotten away from their homes and owners and have gathered with the other dogs, and cats that have been attacked, which is certainly, of course, it can be gruesome. It's sad for the owner. I'm more worried about the people and city councilman. Which city councilman was that was describing stories of people?
CJ Small.
CJ Small, and a lady came to council this week and told a terrible story about how her cat Vincent Van Meow, because he had part of his ear was missing, so she named him that.
I had that story, but I left that part out. But go ahead.
I'm not trying to make light of it. I was just saying that was his name, but she told the story that he was attacked by dogs in her yard and killed. And these dogs had some dogs that got away from owners on a frequent basis. And so, she told her story, then C.J. Small told the story afterward that he had somebody in his district who was attacked, a man who's, you know, a 60-year-old man, which sounds old now, but not that old now. It sounds a lot younger to me now than it used to. But,
me too.
Was attacked while he was mowing the lawn and, you know, had pretty bad injuries.
Mm.
And so, you know, they're talking about doing some, trying to really revamp the animal control laws around here. It's, you know, I know I had a situation last year where I had a pack of dogs that just took up residence in my yard.
Really?
And, yeah, and they were sitting on this wood pile I had. I mean, just like, it was bizarre. But it took 5 days to get animal control out there.
Mm.
It took forever.
Yeah, one of the lines from Kyle Hamrick's story this week, who is at those council meetings and does a great job writing about what's going on in the city, said that Small added he also heard from residents in the Morningside community who often have to sit in their vehicles for long periods of time to avoid being attacked by dogs before they can enter their homes. That's just unacceptable. Yeah. Unacceptable.
Yeah, it is a problem. There are definitely a lot of people who let their dogs run loose or don't secure them properly. And then there's, you know, I saw online the other day, somebody posted a picture of a dog locally that was just basically chained up and starved. And, you know, so there's a lot of animal cruelty things. I know Sheriff Birch has really been interested in that as well, in the animal cruelty issues. But this, all these things really, you know, people need to be more responsible about their ownership of dogs and take care of their animals and keep them from running wild, basically, and going out and hurting other people or hurting animals. It's a problem.
A developing story you have is about the Gaifers building. It's big story because it's right there on Bienville Square. There's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of discussion
over the years.
Over the years, and I'm picturing in my mind the real estate agent that's over this deal is a monkey wearing a wig and some pearls, but that's not the case.
That sounds like you've taken some hallucinogenics, but it's under contract. It's pending, I guess, is what it's saying.
Okay,
it's pending contract. We don't know anything particular about it other than the word on the street, and we've got it from pretty good sources, that it is being considered for a boutique-type hotel.
Yeah.
So that's good. You know, it had been considered before for some low-income housing, which I should say, you know, not a federal program or anything like that.
Yeah.
That met with a lot of blowback, and people were upset by it. And so it sat empty for another couple of years at least. Hopefully something will happen because it's a really huge building, but also right there on Bienville Square. And that would be terrific to see something come to pass there that would really improve that block.
Mm-hmm. I remember that the initial conversation about that low-income housing, if I remember this correctly, but was that there's so many people, the servers and people who bartend or serve downtown, that's their job. Yeah. And there's really nowhere for them to live. And that the affordable aspect of that was so they could find a place to stay.
Yeah, that's what was proposed. But, you know, it ran into a lot of opposition and it just didn't happen. But hopefully this will. I mean, we'll find out more about it soon. But it would be really good for downtown to see that happen.
You know, one of the more dramatic stories I've read in the last couple of weeks, and we didn't get to talk last week because of Thanksgiving, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, but this
I did.
Baymanette tiff, and Grant McLaughlin's been writing about this, I think it was last week or maybe in the week prior, where you guys poured over all of this audio and I think a little video evidence of this basic, I guess, fight, I can call it that, between Harry Still and Councilman Matthew Franklin and Baymanette. I mean, the two were going after each other. It started in the office, and by the end of it, Harry Still allegedly had wrapped up the councilman and was asking him to stay uncle, and the councilman was threatening him and his dog's life. And now that story's grown a little bit as Still now facing charges, I guess.
Yeah, he was actually found guilty the other day in municipal court, so he's appealing that. They got into a fight, and basically it was the audio is basically says, you know, they were discussing politics, the city politics, and the police department. There's a lot of intrigue there because the new mayor coming in had been very critical of some police shooting in Bay Minette, and still was saying something to Franklin about, you know, the rumor that a bunch of the cops were going to leave and all this kind of thing, and it turned into a fight. And I mean, the two men, you know, who are not young guys either. They're no spring chickens. Both of them rolling around out in the street, I think, fighting. So, it turned into that. And I don't think anybody was injured, you know, or seriously injured. But anyway, that's where it is now. So,
yeah.
It's moving to circuit court.
And so, such a dramatic story. I mean, all these different players involved, former police chief Al Tolbert, who left chief once the new mayor took over, and now he's with the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. And you also have the new mayor of Bay Minette asking the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office for a little bit of help in controlling some of the crime in his city.
Yeah, and you know, Harry still has, you know, he's not endeared himself to a lot of the politicians over there. He has a podcast that he is on, and he's been very outspoken, and you know, he's a little bit of a wild man at times in terms of just saying what's on his mind. So I think he feels like he's being singled out and being abused by the system. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, some would say that Harry does a good job of singling himself out, standing out. You know, I'm not critical. That's his style. But when you are that animated, sometimes people notice you. That's the way it kind of works. Last thing, you had a story that I didn't fully get a chance to get all the way into it. Moonlight Mansion. Manson, I should say, and Magnolias. And there's a tie to the Charles Manson family in this story?
Yeah, it is about Patricia Krenwinkel, who wasn't from Mobile, but she spent some time in Mobile. Her mother lived here for decades, basically, those who are familiar with the Manson murders, I think most of the listeners are, she was one of the Manson family members. Mm-hmm. She is still currently in jail for the murders of she was involved around seven murders that took place over two nights there, but she came to Mobile afterwards and hid out. She went to Spring Hill for a semester. Went to Theodore High School. So Kevin Lee did an absolutely fantastic job of the story. It's really great. There's a lot of information in there that I never knew about, and really interesting stuff. If you, you know, it's just kind of a great look back at a story that was at that, you know, up until OJ, it was sort of the crime of the century and the trial of the century. And her involvement in it, and you know, Mobile's little piece of it, and our connection to it.
That's so wild. I had passing knowledge of the Manson family, you know, and the ties to Mobile, but I never knew all of this that Kevin Lee wrote.
Let me get this right. In between the time the murders happened and and her being arrested, that's when she was here in Mobile?
She came here to finish out high school, or she came here for high school for a little bit. And she left, and she came back and went to Spring Hill for a semester to either be a teacher or a nun. And then she left and went back to California and got involved with the Manson. Met Charles Manson, and and he told her she was pretty, and they and then she joined his cult and became one of his family members and was involved in all of this stuff.
My goodness.
Yeah, she was.
You know, so and then after the murders were committed, he told her to go hide back in Mobile. She came back here and was arrested here.
That's crazy.
Extradited to California. Yeah, it's a very interesting story.
So she was
it's something that a lot of people probably don't remember or know about.
She was recommended for parole in May of this year. Gavin Newsom said no in October, said she lacks the requisite insight she needs to be safely released. That's read that entire story. It's great. Kevin Lee with the work there at LandyatMobile.com.
That sounds great.
The website, best place to get the subscription so you get those stories as immediately as they're posted, but also the new issues on stands now.
That's right. You can go to LandyatMobile.com and you can check us out there. It is it's just $1 for the first month, so if you don't like it, you can cancel. Check it out. It's only 30 cents a day to keep it after that. So I think we put plenty of news out there all the time to make it well worth your while.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks for the job at Lanyap. Tell everybody we appreciate their work on the staff, and we'll check in again next Thursday.
All right, guys. Y'all watch out for those monkeys out there.
Always do.
I wish that were a joke. Here I've got a runny nose, so I'm a little under the weather. If I were attacked by that monkey,
you'd have no chance.
I've got no shot.
Not unless I'm around.
You're going to come home and you're going to come back and say, Dan no longer has a face.
8:51. We'll be back. More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
The traffic worth an instant replay? A lady's throwing rocks at traffic somewhere? God.
What is going on?
Well, and here's what's going on, too, with Amtrak, right? So, all right, so we followed this story from its infancy of even Amtrak whispering, we might come to Mobile.
Even when they were doing the trial runs with just one car, one train car,
yeah.
There was a vehicle
we
that
couldn't
was
avoid. The... So I would have thought the conversation about Amtrak 6 months in, whatever we're in, would be, what's the pricing? Is it affordable enough? Are people happy with the service? No, the story is we can't stop hitting the train.
Or the train. We can't stop getting in front of the train.
We can't stop
like it.
Getting in front of the train. And it happened again yesterday.
It did.
Down in Bala Battery. And the video is insane because the man, the driver of the truck, I guess we still don't know who it is. It goes around the arm.
The arms that were down.
Right.
Winds around them. Miracle.
A miracle.
Half a second, maybe less, that the cab of the truck would have been just
bang.
Demolished.
Yeah.
Instead, he had made it just far enough, he or she, I guess, I'm guessing a he, made it just far enough across that it hit the bed of the truck, completely ripped it off of the frame, spun the truck around. Then, and there's video of this, Fox 10 has the full scene there from Bayou La Batterie, just south of 90. Then apparently the driver leaves, just darts away. Passenger stayed behind, they said, and thankfully no injuries to them, which was a miracle, but also the roughly 20 passengers that were on board the Amtrak train, not injured.
It looked like the train just kept going. Like it wasn't even aware that. But I mean, you would think if you had the train could have been damaged.
I think it was,
and it could have been damaged to the point where. Or maybe you just halt the train so you find out if you've killed anybody back there.
I'm sure they brought it to a stop not long after.
Okay, but it was rolling on. It rolled right on past, it seemed like.
One texter earlier was saying we need to keep score for the people hit by trains in Alabama and in Mississippi. He said we could figure out who has the dumbest population by who has that highest number. I think it's pretty close to a tie right now.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There have been some over in Mississippi and maybe even Louisiana.
Jeff Porsche on the way. Former State Senator Dick Brubaker in hour one. April Marie Fogle, hour two. And Chris Elliott in hour number three on the way.